Welcome to Prescription for Success with Mark Ward on the Uniradio Network. Today, Mark talks with internationally acclaimed lecturer and best-selling author, Marianne Williamson, who has been called the voice of her generation. Plus, the energetic rhythm and harmonies of Walt Cunningham and One Accord. So, sit back and enjoy. Here's Mark.
Hello, everyone. I am Mark Ward, and this is Prescription for Success. This is the show where we examine the intricacies of success by all definitions, exploring the insights, strategies, and wisdom necessary to create greater success and fulfillment in our lives and in the world. Our guest today, I could not be more thrilled, is an internationally acclaimed author and lecturer. She has published 9 books, 4 of which, including the mega bestseller A Return to Love and Everyday Grace, have been #1 New York Times bestsellers. She has been a popular guest on numerous television programs such as Oprah, Larry King, Good Morning America, Charlie Rose, and her latest professional venture is her radio show airing on the Oprah and Friends channel 156 on XM Radio. In December 2006, a Newsweek magazine poll named her one of the 50 most influential baby boomers. Her latest book is The Age of Miracles, Embracing the New Midlife. And this book examines the reframing of the middle stage of life as the time of rebirth and transition, one that leads to a wonderful sense of joy and awakening. And of course, I am speaking of the incomparable, phenomenal Marianne Williamson. Marianne, I am so excited to have you with us today. My heart is a-beating.
Thank you.
So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I'm really excited to speak with you about your new book, which I just read. But first, I want to ask you about this concept of success.
Great.
I am curious in this part of your life as to how you define success for yourself, and has your definition changed over the years?
You know, one of the stories I tell in my book is about a man named Bob Daley, who used to run Warner Brothers Studios. He was one of the owners of the Dodgers. He ran the L.A. Dodgers. He embodied the notion of the American dream made manifest, extraordinary power and wealth. And then, just at the time when he thought he was going to retire, he became chairman of the board of something called Save the Children. And people that he knew in Hollywood and the power circles of the United States thought he was insane. It was like, I understand you're leaving Warner Brothers to run the Dodgers, but I don't understand you're, taking on a children's charity. And he says, and I talk about this in the book, he says, this is actually the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And he talks about the people who work for these humanitarian causes, like saving children around the world, who have obviously eschewed a path where financial reward would be their main measure of success. And he said that they have more, quote-unquote, psych income. And I think that that's a word sort of on the street now. That's the new buzz, psych income. The realization that we all have that while financial success is certainly a great thing, it's not the only measure of success. And I think the measure of success that we all want now is the feeling that we wake up in the morning and feel there's a real purpose to our life, that we go to bed at night feeling there was some meaning to our having been alive today, that somebody's life might be a little better because we lived today, that we made some contribution. I think that's the success that we're all longing for. And if we can put that together with financial success, that's fabulous. But the finances alone don't give you that feeling of satisfaction.
Psych income. I love that. Mm-hmm. Now, in your new book, you address what it means to reframe and embrace what you refer to as the new midlife. Mm-hmm. Now, first of all, for our listeners, can you elaborate on how you define midlife? And has it changed for us? Is it different than it was for our parents or for our grandparents?
Well, I think there's new psychological territory here. It's not new physically, of course, but it's new psychologically. The author Lydia Bronte wrote a book called The Longevity Factor. And in that, she says that our generation has added 15 years to our lifespan, but she says that it's not at the end, it's in the middle. Mm-hmm. So there is this point, and you know, it's interesting because a 35-year-old friend of mine was reading the book the other day, and she talked about how much it meant to her. So obviously some of these issues have nothing to do with age per se, but I think a lot of them have to do with what occurs inside us when it begins to slowly dawn on us that either youth is on its way out or youth is irrevocably over. I think by the time we reach age 50, to me that was the meaning of turning 50, the realization that it's over. There's no way I can stretch anymore this sense of, well, I'm still young. You're not young anymore, but you're not old either. And I think that's the conversation. What is this in-between period, which feels to me like a kind of second puberty? You know, at puberty, one persona drops away. The persona of the child drops away. The persona of the adolescent, of the teenager, begins to emerge. And so society has a context for that, an understanding that this is something that occurs. And I think the second puberty arises where you're not who you were. You're dropping the persona of the younger adult, and you're reaching your wise years. But what does that mean? Does it mean there's no heat, no excitement, no passion anymore? Not at all. So a lot of this has to be sort of worked through and processed inside us, and I hope that this book makes a contribution to that.
Mm. So what is it that inspired you to write about this particular topic?
Aging.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I don't think that you have any chance of touching a reader or touching an audience unless you're speaking from a place of your own passion. You know, the Course in Miracles says people hear you on the level you speak from. So only if I'm dealing with the deeper issues that I'm processing within myself do I have any chance of writing something on the page that will reach inside anybody else's heart.
So what is it that makes midlife the age of miracles?
Well, it's an age of miracles, or it's not. That's the thing. If you just kind of age on autopilot, you know, these sort of pre-prescribed formulas, and you buy into thought forms like, I'm over the hill, you buy into a thought form like, you know, it's too late for me now, you buy into a thought form like, I'm too old for that. If you buy into those thought forms, then because thought is that level of consciousness creates our experience, if you hold those thoughts, then that will be true for you. And after a certain point in life, it's just a slow cruise to death. But, you know, today you're 40, 45, 50, you could have 50 more good years, you know. So the miracle is a shift in perception. And the reason that this age is an age of miracles, if you choose it to be, is because when you're younger, nature is invested in your being vital in order for the species to procreate. When you're older, nature in a way doesn't care as much anymore because you're not biologically producing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So nature kind of is silent on the subject after a certain point. The miracle is when you say, I will adjust my consciousness in order to create a larger context of possibility here. There is no spot where God is not. There is no age where God is not. Every night is followed by a morning. Every winter is followed by spring. Nature specializes in new beginnings. But when it comes to age, you have to align your thoughts with nature. You have to align your thoughts with the consciousness of the eternally renewable, or the eternally renewable will not be true for you in your experience.
So for those out there who are having difficulty sort of reconciling the truth that we are getting older in what seems to be, you know, a youth-obsessed society, what do you suggest we do?
I think you should go to Amazon.com immediately and order my book.
Well, it's a good suggestion. It was a great read, I have to tell you.
And
for me, it came at just the right synchronistic moment when I was actually having one of those moments of regret. But
wow.
But I digress.
Thank you. No, well, that's important, and thank you. I hope the book provided some comfort.
It actually did. It was very inspiring to me. Now, if one subscribes to mainstream thinking, one could easily conclude that the options for those of us in midlife are limited. But, you know, aren't they in fact reduced?
They're reduced physically, but consciousness, it can't be reduced. You know what I'm saying? So
mm-hmm. The
idea, you know, King Solomon said that his younger years were the years of his personal winter and his older years were the year of his summer. Yes, certain physical opportunities are not available to you anymore. But from a metaphysical perspective, there is the law of divine compensation. You know, one of the images I use in the book is when a woman gets a little older, I said, maybe you can't lift your leg in aerobics class quite as high as you used to, but you lift an eyebrow. You lift an eyebrow in a way that the 25 or 30-year-old woman within you couldn't have. And the fact that you lift your eyebrow at that point just carries so much weight that you've been there and done that in enough areas, that you've achieved some mastery at just being a living human being, that you finally know, I'm not a child, I'm a grown-up, that you have learned from your failures as well as your successes, that you've seen so much of life, that you get it now in some ways that you just couldn't have gotten it when you were younger. Those forces compensate for what you've lost. But you do, I think, it's my experience, you need to grieve what isn't true anymore. And then as you grieve what isn't true anymore, you begin to recognize all the gifts that you had no idea were there because it simply wasn't your time of life to know.
One of the things in your book that I have to say really made me laugh, and I think it's on the back cover of your book as well, so I'm just going to read it, is you say, a friend of mine was sitting once with two of his best friends, a couple he'd partied with long and hard during the 60s. At about 10 in the evening, the couple's 20-something daughter came home, saw them on the couch, and admonished them, "You guys are so boring, you never go out." To which all three responded in unison, "We were out, and now we're in." It's so true. Now, doesn't midlife mean we have a tendency to slow down?
Well, what I discuss in the book is how if you take a good look at your life, you see often how many mistakes you made because you were moving too fast. And so what I've learned in my own life is that slowing down has actually helped me. You know, when this adrenaline of youth, this hormonal adrenaline-driven energy of youth starts to burn away, you become a better thinker, you become more reflective, you become deeper, you become more considered. A story I tell in the book is how when I was a younger woman, there was a song that still gets played quite a bit, Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And he sings, "Sitting on the dock of the bay," and then he goes, "Sitting here resting my bones." Now, I remember when I was younger and that song came out, and I thought, nobody sits there resting their bones. You know what? A younger person can't even relate to the notion that you rest your bones. So later in life, I'm looking at this house with my daughter. And she says, Mommy, come out and see the backyard. And I said, honey, you go enjoy the garden, honey. Mommy's going to just sit here and rest my bones. And I went, oh, my God, what did I just say?
It's come full circle.
It's all over if I'm resting my bones. So then I sat there and I thought, you know what, I am resting my bones. And you know what, I'm enjoying just sitting here. And I remembered how when I was younger, I used to go to Vipassana meditations, Buddhist retreats, and the goal was to be able to just sit there. And now, it's not hard to do. I can just sit here and feel I don't have to perform, I don't have to achieve, I don't have to jump up and please anybody, I'm not running around like a chicken with my head chopped off. And so, what I say in the book is that what this generation could do from our rocking chair could rock the world. Because we are in more of a position, you know, it might be a physical decline in certain ways, but it's a spiritual incline. We actually can go deeper. When you're not, quote-unquote, doing so much, you can with your spirit, soar even higher.
Well, you know, speaking for myself, I know that many times, as I alluded to even earlier this week, I become consumed with the woulda, shoulda, coulda of what I might have been, what I should have done, blah, blah, blah. You know, one of the things that I found so inspiring about your book is that you, as you've been speaking about a little bit, invite us to consider that whatever powers we might lose with age are small compared to the powers that we stand to gain.
You know, Mark, it's interesting what you were just saying about the woulda, shoulda, coulda. This year on New Year's Eve, I made a commitment to myself, and I was with a girlfriend, and I said, you know what, no more. I have spent the last year or two, oh, if only I had. Oh, my God, I was so stupid to do that. Oh, you know, all the woulda, shoulda, couldas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said on New Year's Eve, no more languaging it like that. You'll never hear me. I mean, I'm sure there'll be exceptions, but my commitment to myself was to the best of my ability, I'm no longer going to say, oh, I messed up there. I should have done that. And now it will be languaged in that situation from which I learned so much, blank, blank, blank occurred.
Oh.
Instead of, in that situation, well, I messed up so badly, will now be language, in that situation from which I learned so much, and which can now, you know, fuel my greater understanding, just the languaging of it, because every time we language it, like woulda, shoulda, coulda, we are like putting a bludgeon into our own hearts. And what the Course in Miracles says is that whatever lesson you messed up when you were 30 or 40 or 50, it's coming back around again. And when it comes back around, because that's the nature of the universe, by definition, if you think you messed it up, by definition, it was a lesson you didn't learn at the time. But the way evolution of the universe operates, whatever lesson you didn't learn, it's coming back around. It might be in another town. It might be with more players. But the way it works metaphysically is that if you get it right this time, there will be even more ways that it can be used to bless you and others now. And the other side of that is if you get it wrong next time, it will have ever more harsher consequences every time you get it wrong.
Well, it's both the gift and the curse. It's coming back.
Well, it's not a curse in any
no,
way. It's a gift and an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was laughing when I was reading that portion of your book, because, you know, I was asking myself, does this mean that I'm not required to purchase the red convertible or date a hot young blonde? Speaking of which, do you believe that this stage of life tends to be different for women and men?
Well, there are some physical issues that we have that you don't have. You know, just the very fact that our childbearing years come to an end. You know, nature, up to a certain point, has been invested in women mainly for our capacity to procreate. So when a woman is younger, nature is invested in her capacity to attract a physical partner. So the voluptuousness of youth and the higher breasts and the firmer butt and all that kind of stuff, nature gives a woman that to increase the possibility she will attract a sexual partner, to increase the possibility that she will procreate. Once a woman reaches the age where she can no longer do that, nature doesn't really care whether or not she has sex again. Nature is kind of silent at the subject. And thousands of years ago, a woman's cells were basically, that was old age. I mean, when we see pictures of women, you know, let's say 200 years ago, and she looks old, you think about it and go, so actually, she's probably in that picture only 40 years old. Like, you know, when we'll see a picture of a great-grandmother or something.
Mm-hmm.
So women have this profound transition away from the childbearing years, which involves grief, even if you never wanted children, even if you don't want any more children, the cells cry. The body knows it has entered something completely new. Now, what I talk about in the book and what I feel in my own life, there's a way in which a woman gets sexier because she knows more. You know, when you're younger, as a woman, you tend to be so afraid of men. And being afraid of them limits your capacity to enjoy them at the deepest level. So I think that there is this new breed of hot new mama when a woman has kind of reached her priestess years. I think that when we are younger, men impregnate us. I think when we are older, we impregnate them. They impregnate us with the seed of new biological life, and we impregnate them with the seed of new mental life, emotional life, spiritual life. So the whole sexual erotic dynamic moves into a different place at middle age, but it moves into, in a way, a hotter place, a fuller place. But we're working all this stuff out. You know, it's something we are processing. And I think, yes, women feel that. That we feel that more than men do. And I think that men certainly go through it. Men certainly go through their midlife crisis type of feeling. I think one of the reasons that men so often move towards younger women when they start going through this process, first of all, one of the things I talk about in this book is whether it's a younger man, or, excuse me, whether it's a man reaching for someone younger or a woman reaching for someone younger, part of that's not invalid. Because there's something about a younger person that it reminds you that you're not dead yet. I mean, that can be part of your process. But ultimately, I think as women in our civilization reclaim for us, for ourselves, the sort of erotic glory of womanhood after a certain age, then I think men will be more attracted to it. I think part of the reason that men haven't seen the sort of glorious eroticism of women at a certain age is because we haven't seen it the way we need to ourselves. And that's what I think we're on the brink of now.
Wow. Well, that's exciting.
thank you.
I want to take a break. And when we come back, Marianne, I want to speak to you a little bit about love and, of course, sex in the midlife.
Great.
So we are speaking with Marianne Williamson. Her new book is The Age of Miracles, Embracing the New Midlife. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had any trials and tribulations? Have you ever asked the Holy Spirit to fall on you? Brothers and sisters, when you're going through your issues, learn to praise Him and the Holy Spirit will fall upon you.
Let your spirit fall upon me.
That was Walt Cunningham and One Accord. To hear more of Walt's music, visit waltcunningham.net. Welcome back. We're with Marianne Williamson. Her latest book is The Age of Miracles, Embracing the New Midlife. Now, Marianne, one of the topics that you address is love and, of course, sex. Now, you know, so often when people reach, well, what we will refer to as a certain age, they surrender to the belief that if they are single, that they are going to remain single, and if they are in a relationship, that the potential for fireworks is probably over. So is it fair that we should just surrender, that those opportunities simply pass with our youth?
Well, I think there are two significant things that you mentioned. The first one was this idea that, you know, the thought form that it's over for me now. Mm-hmm. What I talk about in my book is what I call a sex and love fast. And I mention a book, a memoir that came out last year by the actress Ellen Burstyn called Lessons in Becoming Myself. And in that, she talks about how she took a 25-year break.
I know. I gasped when I read that.
I know. She just said, I know, I quote a woman in my book who said, two quotes in there. One was from a woman who I said, are you in a relationship? She said, no, I can't stand who I am in a relationship. I can't do it anymore. I hate who I become when I'm involved romantically. Another woman who said to me after a romantic disaster in her life, she said, another one like that will kill me. And I think when you're younger, you keep putting your, you know, you keep putting your finger in the socket and getting, you know, an electric shock. You keep going for the pain because your desire to have the thrill of the ride overrides the warning signal. After a certain point in life, you realize, until I deal with whatever issues inside myself lead me to attract the wrong ones or blow it with the good ones time after time, I need to stop. I need to deal with those issues. And I think that sometimes we subconsciously put a halt to it. So our conscious mind is thinking, oh, it must be over for me. I don't meet anyone. I'd really love to meet someone. But the subconscious mind has said, no more, no more until I figure these things out. And it's not as hard to do at a certain point because your hormones aren't saying, you've got to get somebody, you've got to get someone. And the body kind of enjoys the downtime. And I think that that's what many people do. And, you know, for most of us, I don't think it's a 25-year break like it was for Ellen Burstyn. But I think that's what a lot of people go through. It's a sex and love fast. You're cleansing your palate. You learn what you need to learn. You finally deal with those issues you need to deal through, not only from childhood, but also from young adulthood. And then when you get back in, you're ready to really get back in. So that's what I think a lot of that is about. The other thing has to do with fireworks. This thing of fireworks is interesting. Heat is heat. It doesn't diminish with age. Love doesn't get boring as you get older unless you do. The issue is not that love gets boring. You tend to get boring if you allow your thoughts to constrict, if you allow your, you know, your basic attitudes about life, your physicality, if you allow it to constrict, nature, you know, there is a force of gravity after a certain point. But the point of life is to transcend mortal forces of gravity through higher consciousness. As you get older, you know more. And also, when you know more about what it means to be human, you have so much more to bring to love. You know, when I was younger, I was so afraid of men because I was so invested in them wanting me. And when you're older and you're less afraid, you can appreciate them more. You know, the need burns away, and that's when the desire often burns the brightest. You know, I can appreciate your body. I can appreciate your weaknesses. I can appreciate your soul. You know, John Mayer sings that song, your body is a wonderland. Well, when you're younger, it is mainly that your body is a wonderland. And when you're older, and so is your soul, so is your mind, so is your heart, the way you think, the way you love, and your body. You know, you don't have to be young to be fabulous.
Well, you know, that is really inspiring, I have to say.
Thank you.
I'm going to walk out of here with a new sense of self. I think.
Well, you don't say. How old are you?
I'll be 46 this
okay,
year.
Okay. You're
I'm getting
the door.
There.
you're just getting in there.
Yeah. Now, forgiveness really seems to play an important role in our ability to age gracefully, you might say.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, there are things that, it's kind of going back in that category of the woulda, shoulda, coulda, this whole idea of past regrets, things we carry from the past. I've met people who are stuck in a sense of victimization and this kind of anger, this emotional rut based on what somebody did to them, some spouse who left, somebody who victimized them 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to ask yourself, you know, who's the real enemy? Is the enemy what that person who did that to me 20 years ago? Or is the real enemy not that person inside myself who has allowed 20 years to pass and I still haven't gotten over it? So forgiveness means, as the Course in Miracles says, reinterpreting what happened. The love you gave was real. The love someone else gave you was real. And everything else was just the personal nightmares two people were going through. And I tell a story in the book about a friend of mine named Gina who went through a divorce. And, you know, it was really a terrible divorce for her. She thought she had a good marriage. And after 11 years, all of a sudden her husband says, "I want out." Now, I've never seen a relationship where, you know, two people's issues were not involved, so I'm not making a judgment about anything that occurred here. But what I saw that was so inspiring to me is the way Gina, although she went through terrible pain, and it was a year of hell for her, but I watched how she worked so hard on a metaphysical level, she worked so hard spiritually to forgive this man, to keep her heart open to him, to not move into thought forms of victimization and anger. I'm not saying she never was tempted by those, that she never succumbed to those, but I watched her really work a spiritual path of forgiveness and keeping her heart open to him. Now, two things occurred because of this. Number one, they were able, ultimately, to be friends again. Number two, it didn't harden her personality. She didn't become a bitter, jaded woman. She became even more supple. I watched her become a more beautiful woman, and I watched love kept rushing in. My daughter and I used to laugh about what a man magnet she was. Now, I watched a lot of men and women go through that same experience, and they become hard, and they become hardened. And then love seems to be repelled. You know, love doesn't get attracted to them anymore because they became hard. So forgiveness is so important, not just so that you can have peace, but so that you can have love again. You know, you always feel at the end of things like, you know, that was the only one for me, and that was my only opportunity. If somebody took my money, that was the only opportunity I had. If someone took my job, that was the only opportunity I had. If that love left me, that was the only opportunity I had. But if you look at nature, nature is, from a metaphysical perspective, is infinitely elastic. Infinitely elastic. The Course in Miracles says there is no order of difficulty in miracles. And that's why if you stand on the miracle, you stand on the belief that if your heart is aligned with love, everything new can begin again. Everything that passed will pass away and the universe will provide the new again. And if what happened, if you allowed what happened to make you a gentler person, a more humble person, a more grateful person, a more appreciative person. I mean, look, if somebody did victimize you that you need to forgive, a very important question is, what part did you play in that disaster? What part did you play, even if it was just that you made it easy for them to do it? That's what you want to do, is learn your part so that things can begin again.
Right, and so much of the forgiveness, it seems, is forgiving yourself.
Forgiving yourself?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So do you think that our ability to embrace the stage of life at this time in history is important for the world at large? And if so, why?
Well, it's important for two reasons. First of all, because it's what's happening. We are living longer. So it's important for us because if you look at your life and you go, I could have another 20, 30 or more good years here, then you have to make a decision. You make an existential decision. Am I going to just be on this sort of cruise button to death and just get more resigned and more sort of dowdy every day and just limit my possibilities? That's a decision every individual has to make for themselves. But there's another issue here, and that has to do with the state of the world. This is an all-hands-on-deck type of moment. Everybody is needed now because Western civilization, human civilization, is like a Titanic headed for the iceberg. We have to turn this ship around, and we have to do it quickly. I don't think anybody can feel truly satisfied deep in their heart right now if they don't feel that they are contributing to this great churning of human history. And younger people have a particular part to contribute here, and older people have a particular part to contribute here. Each and every one of us, based on what our life experience is, our particular window onto reality, I think younger people are coming from this vision of the future and what they can give. And I think older people bring to it also a lot of wisdom based on what we have already seen. Not the least of which is that if you are a certain age, you remember Bobby Kennedy, you remember Martin Luther King, you remember a time that was more hopeful. And so we can help contribute that greater hope today. This is an amazing moment in human history. I think it's an amazing moment in American history. And we're either headed for a new Dark Ages or for a new age of light. It's going to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any of us can feel deeply satisfied now or on the day of our death unless we take part in this great revolution one way or the other.
So speaking of those younger people, for our listeners that have not yet entered midlife, do you have any words of wisdom for them that might better prepare them to appreciate what is coming?
You know, it's so interesting because younger people who have read this book have told me how much they appreciate it. You know, I remember when that movie Golden Girls came out, or not the movie, the television
the
sitcom,
mm-hmm.
and it was so successful, and I saw a really interesting interview once with one of the stars of that show, I think Betty White. She talked about, she said, first of all, we couldn't get the sitcom done because people said nobody's going to want to watch a show about three middle-aged ladies who are roommates. She said, so first of all, we were just surprised that the show became a hit. She said, second of all, we were absolutely dumbfounded by how young people love the show, how little kids love the show. Well, what was that? Well, it's because basically authentic truth is authentic truth, whether you're 5 years old or 50 years old. And so I think that some of the deeper conversation of this book really is ageless. And secondly, I think that it's kind of a preemptive strike of wisdom. You know, even if you're 30 today on this planet, you're already making little decisions on every given day, whether you're fighting age or embracing it in a new way. So I would hope that, in a sense, whoever would be comforted by this book, I think they'll pick it up, and people will know intuitively if this is for you or not. I just know that my girlfriend, who's 34 the other day, was in love with the book, and that was, like, really satisfying for me.
And
but then she gave it to her mother.
Well, you know, at times it also seems almost as if some pieces of wisdom are accelerated. And what I mean by that is when you watch even sort of the coverage of the political caucuses and you see the young people and you hear some of the young people speak, I'm actually struck by some of the wisdom that seems to be showing up in some of the younger people in ways that I don't think I would have heard when I was that age.
Well, I would have heard it when I was that age.
Yes,
maybe
the
60s. That difference
mm-hmm.
between your age and mine.
Right.
I'm thrilled to see it. Yeah, I think that the Iowa caucuses were a very exciting moment. I was on Deepak Chopra's radio show earlier today, and he was going on and on about it and how much he felt it was a leap in consciousness. And absolutely, younger people helped open that door. It's fabulous. But we have a part to play, too, those
oh, sure.
of us who are not young. But absolutely, it's very, very exciting. There's a sleeping giant waking up right now.
So, Marianne, if you could share only one piece of wisdom with the world, what would it be?
Let's have a little more mercy towards each other.
So how can our listeners support you in your work, Marianne?
Go to Amazon.com this very moment.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I don't think that it's about anybody. You know, I think in terms of how we support each other most right now is the word encouragement. Let's give each other courage. Give each other courage. My hope is that with this book and with all the work that I do, that I support the reader, that I support the listener, you know, and whether somebody and what people do with whatever gift I might be honored, you know, I might think I might have given them, and I'm honored to think that something I say or something that I write might be a gift to someone, then it's up to them what they do with it, how they pass it along, how they embody it. I think it's all one big sort of spiritual amniotic fluid we're all involved in. And anytime any of us love anybody, I think it basically blesses everybody.
Well, as one who has recently had to check a new category box on the age portion of my insurance form, Marianne, I want to thank you for all of us for this new inspiration and, of course, for all that you do. You, I can say this with great conviction, are the brightest of lights, and I am so honored to have had this opportunity to speak with you. So thank you. And with your permission, I want to close with some of your own words that I just found incredibly inspiring.
Thank you so much for what you said. Thank you.
And you say, midlife is not a crisis. It is a time of rebirth. It is not a time to accept your death. It is a time to accept your life and to finally, truly live it as only you and you alone know deep in your heart it was meant to be lived. So the name of the book is The Age of Miracles, Embracing the New Midlife. Marianne Williamson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to have
been. Thanks for listening to Prescription for Success with Mark Ward on the Uniradio Network. Thanks also to webmasters Jim Nagley and Bruce Laurie. Engineering and voiceover by Bruce Laurie. The opinions and views expressed by the host and guests of this program may not be those of the Unity Movement or Unity in Chicago. Please send questions or comments to mark@unitychicago.org. And we invite you to return next time for Prescription for Success with Mark Ward on the Uniradio Network.